Okay, we're recording.
Welcome to episode 9 of What the Badge. An exciting week. I watched the episode twice.
I didn't watch it once, and it was the longest 3 hours of my life.
2 hours.
No, it's definitely more like 4.
Well, for me it was. though inadvertently so. I didn't plan to watch it twice, but I didn't remember enough from watching it the first time to coherently speak about it on this podcast. So I guess in some levels it's like watching it 1.5 times, you know? I was half with it last night.
But I don't... Like, seriously, I just came in here and sat and was ignoring it, playing a game, and it was never ending.
Yeah, I don't really know why they chose to divvy up the episode the way that they did this week. I think more and more as I watch this and start to dissect it as a critic of sorts, more than just a common viewer, I find myself increasingly confused by the way that it's edited. Like, that's become, if there's been like one theme of this podcast, it's my confusion over why it's edited the way that it is. And that's true again this week. We left off with the three suitors in Dallas. And that's where we pick up, because unlike previous seasons where the bachelor or bachelorette's family is flown to whatever remote locale the proposal is going to take place, so that somebody's hand in marriage can be requested before Neil Lane shows up with the rings, this time around, they are not doing it that way. Rachel explains, because her sister Constance is 8 months pregnant, cannot fly, and nobody can get engaged to Rachel without Constance's approval.
Oh, okay.
She is the immovable wall of motherhood and friendship and sisterhood that you need to scale over in order to get that, I don't want to say, I guess it's the hand, to get that hand. Like, that's what it is.
So was she effective in this goal?
Constance is great. I mean, Constance was great last season. Constance and also Rachel's mom, Kathy, they both seem more grounded than Rachel in that I don't think either one would ever do this show. I mean, they don't need to, because Constance is happily married and Kathy's
popping out kids already.
Yeah, she's on baby number 2 and Kathy's been with her husband and Rachel's father for however long. Rachel's father, who still refuses to appear on the show. Last season, we pretended that he was on a business trip. This year, there's no excuse made. It's just...
We're not pretending. We're just acknowledging that he refuses.
Yeah, it's just, oh, he won't be here. He's a federal judge, so...
Well, that makes sense.
He cannot appear on the show.
Yeah.
It's not even whether he wants to or not. And also along...
Can they even say his name?
I don't think they have. And along those lines, you know... The guys all compliment, like, how nice the house is, but it's not really Rachel's mom's house. They had to rent, like, an Airbnb or rent a house for the
can triangulate, no?
Well, so that no one can come to this federal judge's house and try to, like, kill him.
I mean, I'm not laughing at the idea of coming to kill this federal judge, but just that you have to rent an entire house so your child can be on reality TV is just above and beyond.
Now, the shocking thing is not that Rachel's father can't appear or that Constance is about to pop at any moment, or that really they're switching it up, although the guys would have you believe that that is the shocking thing. The shocking thing for me is that Rachel says she never thought she'd get to this point, which if
but by definition of the show, she would be getting to this point.
Exactly. When you're a contestant on the show, you can say that. And you can say that with a straight face. Last season, when Rachel was like, I never expected to be here. I never thought I'd be in the final three. It's like, okay, yeah.
I believe that.
Like, because you probably have to safeguard yourself and your emotions when you go on a show like this, thinking, I'm okay if I only make it to, like, top 6. I'm okay if I go home first night, even. If you're the Bachelorette, what do you mean you never thought you were going to make it to this point? Did you just think you were going to go home? You're going to pack it in and give up halfway through the season? It's such an empty idea, and she says it with all the gusto a person can deliver that sentence. as if to sway America, like, yes, I'm glad that you got to this point in your journey. It's very, very bizarre. But, like, most of this episode is Rachel saying things that make me like Rachel less as a person. That is the real takeaway from this 2 hours. The first guy up is Peter, who, again, Peter is the next Bachelor. You know, there's not even any pretending anymore. We've gotten to a place where there's no pretense, and he doesn't seem like he's particularly happy to be there. She doesn't seem like she's particularly happy to have him there.
Was he, like, goading her into kicking him off, or?
I mean, he's being very respectable and very honest and putting all of his emotions out there, you know, in the open, and Rachel seems to be cutting him down at every opportunity. So it's uncomfortable because he'll say things like, okay, I don't know if I'm ready to say that I'm falling in love with you. And she'll stare at him and like,
she'll insist.
Yeah, and like, wait, like, okay, are you ready now? It's been 30 seconds.
So she's setting him up to fail.
Yeah, and like I said last week, I don't know how much of that is the producers saying to him, look, you know Brian is the front runner here, and you know you're probably not going to win, so like, let's begin crafting a narrative for next season of The Bachelor, and how much it is just genuine coming from who he is. I think to answer that, you'd have to know who Peter is in his real life, and I don't. But it is amusing to me that either a producer or Peter himself told Brian that he didn't really plan on proposing at the end of this. Because as soon as Peter and Rachel leave the the hotel, Brian turns to Eric like a gossipy little bitch and says, you know, he's not even going to propose to her. He doesn't deserve to be here.
Okay. Brian is trouble.
Yes.
Peter is not trouble.
I think that's how you ended up categorizing him 2 weeks ago. So let's stick with that.
And the other guy is sensing patterns.
Yes.
Gaptooth?
Gaptooth is Peter, not Eric.
Okay. Not trouble Gaptooth.
Yes.
Okay.
But I do appreciate that Eric's response to Brian trying to be this bitchy 15-year-old boy is just kind of confused.
Like, we're not friends.
Well, he stares at him, and then he says, but wait, what's the protocol even? Like, he's confused about the idea that you could not propose at the end of this.
Oh, he thought this was you have to propose.
I don't think he ever even questioned. He was like, oh, well, we came to do this show. Don't we have to propose? Like, if Neil Lane shows up and gives me a ring, I have to use that ring.
Isn't it in your contract? It's in my contract.
And him and Brian sort of nod over this as we cut to Peter shopping with Rachel.
I just have this image of the two of them sitting on the couch, not looking at each other, just sort of nodding slightly off rhythm from one another.
That's about right. But each guy gets a perfunctory sort of activity prior to meeting the family. And just like last week, they had something they did with her in their hometown before she met their families.
Are some of these things more perfunctory than others?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Because Peter's is nonsense. She says, hey, you're going to meet Constance. We should get a baby gift for her. And while we're getting this baby gift, we should also get something for her son, Alistair, who's like 3 years old, because he'll be sad if his brother or sister-to-be gets a gift and he doesn't.
This sounds like you're foisting off the chores you have to do for your family on ABC.
I mean, are those things that you would do with your significant other? Yes.
I mean, a well-established significant other.
Exactly. It's more marriage sort of stuff, where your wife says to you, like, oh, we gotta go, my sister, and you know the nephew, and blah, blah, blah. So on one hand, I go, all right, well, Peter's hop, skipped, and jumped over the, like, let's do romantic dates in Dallas, right, to let's go shopping at this weird baby convenience store. But on the other hand, Peter got gypped, because his perfunctory pre-family meeting date is wandering around a baby store, like Babies R Us, and trying to decide what to buy Alistair so that he won't be sad that he's going to not be an only child anymore.
And has not met Alistair.
Exactly. It's... There's nothing romantic about that.
Right.
If the whole point of this is to grow the relationship and deepen feelings, I've never once felt deep with a woman while shopping with her. Typically, when shopping with a woman, I wonder why I agreed to go out and do that. Right. I also feel like they probably feel the same way about shopping with me, because I'm not fun to shop with, and I know this.
I feel like that's grounds for breakup.
Not being fun to shop with?
No, just dragging someone shopping. Like, I hate shopping so much.
I was going to say, maybe we've really unlocked why I can't keep a relationship if not being...
I mean, that's a distinct possibility, Wes. I'm not ruling it out.
They then go to the house. They get big brother, little brother matching shirts for these kids. So that's how I learned that the baby is going to be a boy.
That sounds like especially the older one, Alistair, is really into that gift.
He gets some sort of a stuffed animal as well.
Oh. Slightly better.
I guess that will keep him busy. But before they walk into the house, Peter has something very important to tell Rachel.
Oh.
He's falling in love with her.
Well, snap.
So for weeks, she hasn't been able to get this out of him.
Finally.
And Rachel's excited. Okay. Maybe the most excited I've seen her for 9 weeks. She finally wore him down. And got those three words.
She got the response she wanted. Congrats.
But not even really, because, and this is an important distinction too, Rachel loves to use semantics as a way out of things. So saying, I'm falling in love with you, is not the same as saying, I'm in love with you. This is an important distinction that she will use at least 4 times in this 2-hour episode. Because although she's told each of the men she's falling in love with them,
she hasn't told them she's in love with them.
Correct. And so it doesn't mean...
It's very lawyer-y of her.
It doesn't mean as much. It also doesn't mean as much that Peter phrased it that way, but it means something. Because up until this point, he's been completely guarded and not told her at all how he's feeling. Now, armed with this ebullience, they walk into the rented Airbnb, and Peter is subjected to her family, which is her mom, her sister, her sister's husband, and her Uncle Jeff, and Uncle Jeff's wife, whose name I did not bother to write down and or remember.
Did she get a Chiron, though?
No. She also doesn't really speak. I think she asked one question of all three men combined. So she doesn't have a presence.
Okay.
Know that she's in the room, and know that we won't speak about her again for the rest of this podcast.
Okay. Noted.
Even Uncle Jeff really doesn't do much. It's a three-person show, which is exactly the same three people it was last year when Nick came home to meet her family. That's Constance, Kathy, and the brother-in-law, Alex. Just the three of them till dawn.
Is Constance Alex?
Alex's husband, yes.
Okay.
He is a very white man. I say that because he might be whiter than any of the men that competed for Rachel's hand in marriage this season, complete with a big bushy red beard.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah.
And he loves being on television.
Wasn't he...
He loved being on television last season, too.
Yeah, I feel like you told me that he came off sketchy.
On Nick's season, I thought, this guy wants his own show. Like, he's out here, he's angling.
Sure.
Last night, it wasn't quite so bad. It was just more... I'll step back. He's probably not used to being the dominant male presence in the Lindsay household. But by virtue of her father not appearing on this show, this is his, like, rare opportunity to be that male presence.
He's default right now.
And he's taking advantage of it.
Okay.
At lunch, Kathy begins asking the sort of very basic questions of Peter. How long his parents have been together? Are they still married? When did they get married? When did they meet? Mm-hmm. They may have said this last week and I missed it, but Peter's parents met when they were 20 years old. And they got engaged after 1 month of knowing each other.
Wow.
And they've been married for 36 years.
Wow. All right.
This is a solid argument for Peter in terms of why the show could work. So it's kind of surprising that he's the guy that's like, I'm not going to get engaged after a month of being on this show.
Right, but he's the one who basically equates engagement with the marriage.
Well, we'll get to that, because at a certain point, I'm going to ask you what you think of engagement versus what I think of engagement, because that might be the most interesting part of this podcast, but I don't want to blow our load too soon.
Okay.
But Peter is very, again, he's very forthright and very well-spoken. More than any of the other men this season, everything that he says feels like there's real intention and purpose behind it. Nothing is bullshit. Nothing is being said because there are cameras present. I've built my own version of this in my head because I know that he's in all likelihood going to be the Bachelor. So it forces me to ask questions. But if I wasn't watching the show, if I was sitting in the room with him, I don't think I'd ever have a question about his intention. Because I'm now watching something that's a filter of a thing, I then go, okay, well, I don't think he's going to win. And if he's not going to win, let's backtrack that. Was he asked to say this, or was he asked to imply that?
Oh, you mean that they're building the narrative yes. up to him being the next Bachelor?
Yes.
Oh, okay, I see.
But he says to Kathy and Constance and the other people at this table, I felt an instant connection with Rachel. She's brought out something in me that I didn't know was there. I didn't realize I was falling in love with her. If I had sat down with you guys a week ago, I don't think I would have been able to say that. And then...
Smooth.
And then we had this elimination ceremony last night, and I was staring down the precipice of going home after having not seen her for 5 days, and I thought, well, these last 5 days have been awful. And now, I may never get to be with her again. And that pit that I felt in my stomach made me realize, oh, that's love. That fear of losing that person and not being able to be with them, I'm starting to feel that. And I had to let myself say that to your daughter before we walked in the house. And Rachel's beaming. She's beaming even more than she was outside now. Like, because, and she knows her parents and her sister and everyone is very skeptical of this process.
Sure.
So by bringing,
for good reason.
By bringing Peter home first, it could have gone really poorly. It could have been like, I don't know if I'm in love with your daughter. But instead she gets this, and I'm like, he seems like a Romeo on horseback, like riding in to the Airbnb to assuage anybody's fears that this show could work.
Did she get to pick the order?
I would imagine no. I also don't know if this is shown in the correct order that it occurred.
Okay.
Because, like I said last week with hometowns, they cut them all out of order.
Yeah.
This feels like it was actually the order they shot it, though. And I feel like Brian being left for last is intentional. And I do feel like Peter going first is intentional.
Mm-hmm.
But probably the opposite of why they thought that. I think they thought Brian was going to be the easiest, so putting him last was great. You know, you save the best for last. And,
sure.
and Peter might have been the most difficult. And in reality, they sort of flip-flopped.
Yeah, that doesn't necessarily surprise me. Given what you've told me about Brian / Trouble.
Yeah. Well, Constance, when she finally gets a moment alone with Rachel, has one very important first question. Have you told any of these men that you're in love with them? And thus begins Rachel's, like, dancing around things that she said. She's like, well, you know, Constance, I've told them I'm falling in love with them, but that's not the same thing. And Constance is like, kind of, though, Rachel.
That's some good lawyer double speak right there.
It's kind of the same thing. And then Constance, in her infinite wisdom, says, I just want to remind you, a year ago, you came home with Nick and you were falling in love with him, too. Which is a thing that only your big sister can say to you with a bitchy,
yep.
bitchy, icy glare.
Yep. This is very sisterly. A-plus sistering.
Kathy wants to know, what are the red flags, Rachel? What are the things about Peter that most worry you?
What are the things that you're ignoring?
And naturally, it's, I don't know if he's going to propose to me at the end of this.
That's not necessarily a red flag.
Peter gets his moment alone with Kathy, and so she pounces on this because she knows that now this is a source of conflict between the two of them. And if there's one good thing, if there's one thing mothers are good at, it's identifying conflict in the relationship of their children and then pouncing on it.
That's real true.
But Peter beats Kathy at her own game.
Impressive, go on.
Or potentially, Kathy and Peter are playing the same game, which is called being sane, rational adults.
That sounds like a real boring game that this show does not approve of.
Because he says, look, yeah, I've absolutely told your daughter I don't know if I'm going to propose to her at the end of this. Because if I'm going to propose to somebody, that means I'm in love with them. And I don't know if I can say that I'm in love with your daughter to that degree after barely knowing her for, you know, a month and a half, 2 months of filming. Mm-hmm. And Kathy's like, bless you, child. That's because my daughter's crazy and think and thinks that this is going to be like sunshine and daisies at the end of this. But she doesn't know if these relationships even work outside of the house. She does say she hopes that if they continue dating, because Peter is very clear, he also doesn't want to ask for her hand in marriage.
Right.
He didn't come to the house. He did not come to the Airbnb for that. He came to ask, meet the family, which I feel like meeting someone's family even 2 months into a relationship is...
That's pretty soon.
It's pretty soon. And like last week, we addressed the fact that I had never brought people home to meet my parents because it was such a sticking point with some of the guys. I've met women's parents. But I don't think 2 months. I think it's been more than that. With almost, there might be one that I met sooner, but that's because they were visiting and in town, and it was like, if you don't meet them now, you won't meet them.
There's a distance thing to think of, and an opportunity, and all that jazz.
Which is, I guess, sort of what this is as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Peter's not going to just take that and run with it in terms of give me your blessing for 6 months from now when I do propose or whatever. And Kathy's just like, all right, well, if you keep dating my daughter, I hope it's serious. You know, I hope that it's not, you know, a casual thing. Which I don't think Peter at any point in this thinks it's going to be casual. He just doesn't think it's going to be an engagement. Because those are, you know, you can be in a relationship, you can be in a serious relationship, you can be engaged. There's different degrees of all of this.
Of course.
Which Rachel doesn't really seem to understand.
Yeah.
Which is very strange because she's 31 years old, so...
But this also goes to my previous supposition that perhaps she really does want to be married and that's part of her happiness, but she doesn't necessarily want it now, except everything is telling her that she's supposed to want it now.
Yeah. I mean, all in all, it's not a bad date. For the two of them. I think Peter comes out looking great. The last moments of this date are him playing with Alistair on the floor looking like a dad. You know? If you're a woman watching this, I imagine you're sitting at home being like, Rachel, if you don't pick this man, you are an idiot. I, as a man, was sitting at home being like, Rachel, you're not going to pick this man, and I already know that you're an idiot. But the Twitter sphere still like vehemently believes that Peter has a chance to win this, and if I was handicapping out of the three men left, I would say he has the worst shot.
Hey, sometimes Twitter pulls off miracles.
That's true. They got Timeless renewed.
Good job, Twitter.
Now, as Rachel and Eric head off to date number two, we get a glimpse of Brian and Peter back in the hotel. And in case it hasn't been clear for however many weeks, Brian and Peter hate each other. A lot. And leaving these two men in the hotel room and just sticking a camera on them, which we haven't actually seen them do in weeks, proves to be wonderful. Because Peter says the sentence, yeah, I just don't want to be sitting here with you right now.
Out of the blue?
They're talking about how Brian tries to goat him, which is Brian. Okay. He's not Lee, but he knows that he can get under Peter's skin. And he says to him, like, I don't think you really want to be with Rachel. I don't think that you're serious about being here, and I don't really think you deserve to be in the final two. Not in so many words, but that's the definite implication of this conversation. Mm-hmm. And Peter's like, okay. And he's like, did you even ask for her hand in marriage? And Peter's like, no, I told you I wasn't going to do that. I've been very clear. And I don't really want to sit here and think about her going on a date with one of her boyfriends while I'm sitting with another one of her boyfriends. Because if I'm having those thoughts and those worries, I shouldn't also be thinking about, like, oh, where am I going to get the ring? You know, like, those are two things that you should be very exclusively dating someone before you're proposing to them.
Well, we know the answer to that is Neil Lane.
Yes.
So.
In all of his,
silly concern.
Plastic surgery glory. Rachel and Eric head off on their date. And Eric gets a much better perfunctory pre-date experience than Peter did. They go to the top of a very tall building. I don't know the name of this building, but beautiful skyline. They have a meal together. They talk about what it's going to be like meeting her parents. Rachel's still very worried. Because Eric is inexperienced in love. He's never been in love before. He's never been in a serious long-term relationship.
Okay.
Has he ever, you know, she's like, have you ever met a girl's parents? I know that you've never brought anyone home prior to me, but have you met other people? So yes, I've met two girls' parents, most recently 7 years ago.
How old is he?
He's 30, no, he's 29.
Okay.
So he met a girl.
Fresh out of college.
Well, no, he met the girl, the first set of parents, on prom night in high school.
That does not count. That absolutely does not count.
And set two was senior year of college when he went home with a girl for Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
And nothing since then.
I need more details about this girl at Thanksgiving in order to accurately make a judgment.
His most recent long-term relationship was 8 months, 2 years ago.
Does that count as long-term?
That's the question that Constance will broach when, as soon as Eric says this. Which is a great segue because no sooner has he walked in the door that Constance is on top of him. Like, what do you mean you haven't been in a relationship since 2015? Why did that only last 8 months? How could you have never been in love if you're 29 years old? She's not pulling any punches with Eric. She needs to get to the bottom of things and fast. And to his credit...
What does Constance do for a living?
I don't know.
Investigative journalist?
It seems like everyone in this family is somehow related to the law, but I don't know if Constance is as well.
Investigative law journalist?
Maybe. Maybe she's like one of the investigators who works for the DA's office. I know those are things because of Law and Order Trial by Jury and also the dearly departed Chicago Justice. Otherwise, I wouldn't know that. But
mm-hmm. Okay, Wes.
I learn all my things about the law through Dick Wolf. That's really what you need to know.
You went to the law school with Dick Wolf?
Yeah, it's the greatest law school. It's been going.
It's got the best success rate.
founded in the early 1990s. Eric's really won me over. I said that last week. I'll reiterate it again. I was rooting for his elimination earlier this season, and I thought he was very frustrating to watch. But a switch flipped at some point, and the Eric who was like paranoid and obsessed with the fact that he was the only black guy left, or that she was weeding black guys out, disappeared. And the new Eric is emotionally vulnerable and worried that he might get eliminated, but for the right reasons, because he's falling in love with Rachel and doesn't want this to end. He is very forthright about all of his deficiencies as a partner and the problems that he's had in the past. He's very open about the dysfunctional family relationships that he has, and the fact that, you know, his dad was in prison. And this,
so, editing or behind-the-scenes handling?
I honestly think that this proved to be a transformative experience for him. I think that he's genuine when he says, I was never in love prior to coming to the show, and I think the accelerated pace at which the show forces you to fall in love with somebody has made him reflect on who he is, what he wants, and what love is.
Okay.
And on that level, it's sort of admirable because you watch it and you go, this is what the show should be. This is what it should be as a social experiment and how it should serve to better the contestants, whether they win or not.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, most of this episode watching Eric, my heart broke because I'm like, you're not going to win. And it's going to be so tragic when you get kicked off.
Oh, poor Bebe.
Because you will have gone through all of this growth in service of trying to marry this woman. You know, and I've had friends that found somebody they thought, oh, this is who I want to be my wife. And they've said, all right, now I need to better myself to be deserving of them and their love.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the end of that, they've married those people, or they've been in, you know, they're still in long-term relationships.
They weren't competing with
two
other guys.
He's going to have gone through all that and then end up alone. And...
Well, he's not going to paradise?
He's not going to paradise. And I think that is because they want to play the game of who will be the next Bachelor.
Not somebody who went to paradise?
No, if you've gone to paradise, with the exception of Nick Viall, you are not the Bachelor.
Okay.
And with Nick, he had already been on The Bachelorette twice and then went to Paradise, and they image rehabbed him in Paradise to make him The Bachelor.
Okay.
So, I would be shocked if anyone comes out of Paradise and goes on to be the next Bachelor. I think it's going to be one of these three men that is left. I still think it's going to be Peter. But if it's Eric, there's a great narrative that seemingly crafted itself. Which is, he finally learned how to love, or what love means. So who better suited to now go out looking for love than him?
For the next Bachelor?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
sure
just as good a narrative as Peter's, which is, I was worried about proposing, and when I get down on one knee, I want to know with absolute certainty that this is it.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two competing narratives, and they both are...
Right.
You know,
both good.
They both work. Brian has... The reason I remain convinced that Brian will win is that there's no narrative to Brian. Like,
nowhere to go with him after this. He's just done.
His entire narrative is the Bachelor would be like, he's a fuckboy and Rachel woke up and didn't pick him. Here's 20 23-year-olds that we found.
That sounds like a Paradise contestant.
Yeah. Who are oblivious. Well, he reminds me so much of Josh Murray from last season of Paradise.
Who?
The emotionally abusive guy that ate pizza all the time.
Oh, did they photoshopped him, or they put together a supercut of the dude snoring next to pizza and dreaming of pizza?
Yes.
Yeah, that guy. Was there a book about him or something?
Yes, yes. He had a book written about him, about being emotionally abusive, by the former Bachelorette who eventually broke up with him.
Oh, and that Lace one hooked up with him?
No, he... He left Paradise engaged to the single mother.
Oh no.
And then it didn't work.
Well, no shit.
And then she's back on Paradise this summer to try again.
Oh no.
Because if at first you don't succeed, try again.
I'm gonna drink more.
Back to Eric, though. This is how great Eric has gotten, and how I think fully realized he's become as a man. When Constance says to him, what makes you think that you're ready for marriage? What makes you think you're ready to be with my sister in the long term? He's like, look, every day we spend together, I feel like we get closer and closer. This relationship gets better and better. To me, marriage means commitment. It means compromise. It means sacrifice. It means trying to build a family. And I see your sister, I spend time with her, and I'm ready to make those sacrifices. I'm ready to make that commitment. And immediately...
It's a pretty speech.
Yeah, it's... And you see the switch sort of... Flip and Constance said, she's like, all right, he won me over. Like,
sold.
Kathy not as won over.
Okay.
Because he leaves the conversation with sister and heads right to mom to be like, hey, can I get the hand in marriage, though? Can I get your hand in marriage? Like, is that a thing? You're going to give it to me? And she curbs him. She doesn't say no. She gives him the, well, if Rachel says yes to your proposal, then I wouldn't hate it. You know? Like...
I'm just gonna trust her judgment.
Yeah, I might hate it I might hate it on the inside, but I definitely won't tell her that I hate it on the outside.
And she'll be circumspect with the entirety of the world.
Last up to meet the parents.
Did anybody win mom over?
No.
Okay.
There was no winning mom over.
Okay.
Good
mom.
Mom seems to not respect this franchise at all.
Mom and I, we can have a conversation.
She really doesn't like Brian, which brings us to date 3.
I'm shocked.
Also, people that don't like Brian, Constance, Alex, me.
Everyone but Rachel.
Everyone that's not named Rachel. Uncle Jeff, not a fan. The one time Uncle one time Uncle Jeff speaks in this episode is to kind of be confused about why Brian's in the house.
Well, I mean, when Uncle Jeff speaks, we listen.
Brian is wearing his $8,500 watch that Rachel bought, and I and I put that in quotation marks for him.
Oh, that's on loan until the end of the season.
This is worth noting in Eric's mind, because Rachel is wearing her matching watch.
That she bought herself.
Yes, to go meet her parents without knowing that Brian was going to wear his.
Well, however did they coordinate that?
I would say, you know, if you give a man an $8,500 watch, you can rest assured he's probably going to wear that $8,500 watch, like, every day.
Like, this is my conversation piece. Ask me how much it costs.
And I also don't know if you know this, but Brian and Peter hate each other.
Do they? Have you told me that?
Because, no, I don't think you've told me because that. In case it wasn't made clear before the last date, this time around, they leave Eric and Peter in the room together. And Eric is strongly encouraged to ask Peter what he thinks about Brian going on this date to meet Rachel's family. And Peter, without any irony, turns towards camera and says, well, you know, Miami's known for fake tans, fake asses, and fake cheeks. So I don't really know how real Brian is, but I guess it'll be up to her parents to figure that out.
Wow, how petty.
It also is fantastic.
Oh, it's great.
Because the internet has seemingly dug up evidence that Brian has cheek implants. So whereas my mind went to, like, ass shots, like Peter talking about ass shots, no, he was taking a dig at Brian's fake facial cheeks.
Wow. Okay.
So that pettiness is even, like, higher than I first thought.
Has some respect going on.
Yeah. And man, do I like Peter. And, like, that's the kind of shit that I would say. So I was like, good for you, Peter. Like, you're on this.
Like, Peter and I got a wavelength.
Brian is going to win the show.
You keep telling me this, and then you keep telling me things that make him think, why?
And another example of why Brian's going to win this show, this time around, Peter got to go shopping. Eric got to go to a very tall building. Brian gets to meet Rachel's two closest friends.
What? That doesn't even follow.
So you see the disparity in these perfunctory, but not at all perfunctory, wow, pre-dates.
Yeah, no.
She takes him for mimosas with the two girls who convinced her to do The Bachelor originally, who she works and spends a great deal of her time with in Dallas, and proceeds to tell these women that what she loves about Brian is that there's no gimmick. There's no game.
That's because he has exactly one dimension and it's paper thin.
If you get out of a limo and say, I'm trouble, that is both a gimmick and a game. That's both of those things. And she's like, no, he basically announced to me that he was a douchebag. I knew right away.
So if you're acknowledging that he said he was a douchebag, you're agreeing with that assessment, why is he here?
Because every time that I started to think maybe this was fake, maybe he wasn't real, he just kept saying, no, I am real. And eventually I was like, wow, he's so real.
He's real because he admits to being a douchebag and continues with that behavior?
As Brian put it out there, we went on a date and she literally forgot there were other guys competing for her.
Wow, okay.
And he has these basics eating out of his hand. Like, Rachel's friends love Brian. They love that he's a chiropractic doctor. They love his they love his cheek implants. They love that he's 37, so he's on the older side and certainly ready to settle down at this point.
Absolutely. Kids immediately.
Because if you cross the 35-year-old threshold, you have to be ready to settle down. Right? That's definitely written somewhere.
I think people think it's in our DNA.
Now, for Brian, this was the worst case scenario. Because meeting these two basics convinced him that he could take on the world. That there was no one that could tell him that him and Rachel were not meant to be together.
Everyone loves me.
For the producers, this was fantastic.
Because they introduced him to Mom.
Because now it's time for him to meet the immovable wall that is Constance. And the generally dissatisfied mother that is Kathy.
Come on, pull through for me, ladies.
Spoiler alert. Neither women wanted to do anything with Brian.
So did Brian get the hand in marriage?
Well, Brian, no one was getting Kathy to get that, to give that up, but...
Yeah, but Kathy at least played the game earlier. It was like, well, whatever Rachel wants, I'll be happy with.
She more or less repeats that exact same sentence to Brian, but before we get there, we get really, really awkward moments. Like Kathy asking him, so what's your relationship with your mother like? Which, as we, which as we learned last week...
Unhealthy?
Yeah, that's the best word to describe it. Brian spins it in this way. My mom is the number one woman in my life.
Oh, nope. Party foul. We're already done.
I love her more dearly than possibly anyone on the earth.
Nope.
And Kathy's like, well, hold on. Because if you marry my daughter, and your mom's as possessive as she's sounding... Mm-hmm. At some point, you're going to have to make a choice between wife and mother, and what are you going to, like, choose?
Oh, no. He either said outright, my mom, or he wanted to say my mom, but knew that was the incorrect answer, quaffled, and then said, well, of course, the wife.
He said, I believe that my wife and my mother would be able to work out their differences amongst themselves.
It's not the question.
They would be able to figure it out. And Kathy was like, yeah, but if they can't figure it out, then you have to make a choice. And if you had to make a choice, what would it be? And he kind of bobbled it and then said, well, you know, if she's my wife, then...
Like, all resigned and shit. Like, I mean, I gotta go with the wife because that's what everyone tells me I gotta do.
Yeah, Constance wasn't feeling that answer at all.
Good job, Constance.
You could tell that she and Alex, Alex's mother, have probably butted heads, but Alex sided with her, and she was not convinced that Brian would be siding with Rachel in these arguments.
I don't think anyone's convinced.
Also things that they're not convinced of, Brian repeatedly said, I'm in love with your daughter. What your daughter and I have is love. And Kathy did not believe him, which she made a point of telling him before they even sat down to eat. Like, love is a very big word, Brian. I don't think you know what it means, the way you're just chucking it around. And he proceeds to announce, I viewed Rachel as my girlfriend after 1 week of filming this show.
Okay.
Everyone is confused by this. Because 1 week into filming this show, there were still 25 yeah. men left.
And he'd maybe talked to her for 20 minutes?
At most. Because he hadn't even gone on a one-on-one. So, it's a weird sentence, but it reflects the sheer sort of bullishness that defines him as a man.
He just goes through life full tilt, no consideration.
Yeah, and everything is so surface level. Like, credit to Allie Bartwell at Vulture, who has identified what she believes that Rachel and Brian are on the proverbial third date. Like, in all of her recaps, she's like, these two people are just on that proverbial third date.
For just forever.
Where they, like, need to fuck to realize they shouldn't be together anymore. But the show has, like, not given them that opportunity. So Rachel still just really wants to fuck him, and, like, it's clouding her judgment. And upon reflection, like, yes, that's exactly what this is. I was like, yeah, bravo, Allie, you identified what I haven't been able to put my finger on for weeks of watching this show.
You've said this, though.
Well, I've said it's been surfaced, but, like, the proverbial third date thing, that's what every date they go on feels like a third date. Except this, unless you brought your family to your third date, in which case, this went about as bad as I would imagine that happening. Uncle Jeff is like, Brian, tell me some things that you really love about my niece, you know, below the surface level, below the sort of things that I know about her, you know, what makes you guys so right? And Brian's like, oh, you're going to have to excuse me. And just gets up and leaves the table.
what?
Like, doesn't even try to answer the question. No. Like, he's just like, rather than answer that, I'm gonna leave. You know?
What an A, easy to answer question, if you are of that mind, and B, shitty way to exit the conversation.
But here's what's fascinating. If you're Rachel, you should be pissed at Brian. Instead, she turns
she's pissed at everyone else.
She turns to her mom and says, I am low-key annoyed at everyone at this table right now.
That doesn't sound very low-key.
And Kathy's not playing no games, okay? She then, the sassy, like, black mother in her comes out for the one and only time in this episode as she turns to her daughter and says, you are in a bubble. You are living in a bubble, and I'm here to pop that bubble and show you the realities of the man that you potentially want to marry. And he just got up and left this table. We tried to ask him what he likes about you.
Blessings be upon her mother.
Before a full-on fight breaks out, Alex is quick to step in.
Oh, great. Because that's who we want to hear from.
It feels like a moment that Constance should have stepped in.
Right. I was expecting you to tell me Constance was like, Mom, I got this.
But instead, Alex, and it's kind of me, it might be my favorite moment of this whole episode, turns to Rachel and goes, Rachel, you're being emotional right now.
Whoa, buddy.
And she's back like, up. She's like, of course I'm being emotional. And he's like, you're going to watch this back and you're not going to be happy about the way that you're like talking to your mother. Like, you need to step back for a moment and recognize that we're all here because you asked us to be here. Like, you asked for this.
Oh.
And
also, nothing your mother's doing should be surprising to you.
They break off, and Rachel goes off with Alex to continue that conversation.
Sure, of course.
And he's like, come on, you know, you have to see this. You have to see what's happening here with this Brian character. And Rachel is like, I'm chill until I'm not. And right now, I'm not chill. Brian, meanwhile, goes off with Constance. And in typical Brian fashion, tries to smooth over any problems with nonsense statements that mean nothing. Specifically, he tells Constance, I already feel like I love your family. He has...
What? Absolutely not.
And she's like, you have known us for an hour. So when you say things like that, you have to understand that doesn't instill any more faith in me. It makes me less faithful that you actually love my sister. Everything Brian says...
is a disingenuous lie?
Is a disingenuous lie. It's the thing that, like, the frat guy in college... who, like, tells the girl...
Right, he's just saying what he thinks people want to hear because they'll like him and then give him what he wants.
But to, like, be doing that at 37 is... it suggests that he's never not gotten away with it until 37. Which is impressive, you know, like...
that's why he lives in Miami.
Yeah, fake asses, fake tans, and fake cheeks. Kathy gets her moment alone with Rachel to reconcile after their argument, and she's very, very uncomfortable with everyone throwing the love word around because she didn't even say I love you to Rachel's father until months into their relationship.
Not their marriage, to their relationship.
Yes.
Okay.
months into their marriage would be fantastic. To her, love means that you cannot think about living without the other person. If it physically pains you to think about living without them, that's love. That's the metric by which the relationship should be measured. Her rationale is you're going to have to think about living your life without two of these men. So you cannot be in love with all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And Rachel's like, no, I'm falling in love.
Mom. It's semantics.
It's totally different. And when Brian finally gets to Kathy to ask for the hand, she is just like, you know, you have my blessing to take this love and build on it.
Okay. I'm sensing a little bit of shade being thrown here.
I really wish she had put love in air quotes. Like, you have my permission to take this love.
You can take your love and build upon it.
Yeah. Sadly, no air quotes.
She's too classy for air quotes.
I wish we'd gotten a final recap without Rachel. Like, I wish that the cameras could have stayed in that house or in that Airbnb and just recorded her family
talking
about all three men after having spent 3 days consecutively with them. Because that's probably more interesting than anything in this actual episode.
Yep. I would think so.
But instead, we're off to Spain.
Okay.
Because it's time for the fantasy suites.
So we went from Tejas to Spain?
We went from Dallas to Spain. Oh, Texas, yes. I was like, what? Yes. We went from Dallas to Spain, specifically the Rioja region, which Rachel says is perfect for falling in love.
I have priorities.
She plans to take every minute possible to figure out what is going on with each of these men, which is in fact why she's on the show. So I'm glad that she's again explaining to me what the purpose of, like, the purpose of this show is.
Sounds like dating.
What I love is that during this montage that she's talking over, we get a weird clip of Brian playing soccer with street urchins. Like, Peter's looking pensive off into the sunset, wearing a really tacky shirt that has a camouflage pocket on it. Like, it's a gray shirt with just like a camouflage pocket sewed onto that gray shirt.
Okay.
And Eric's already on his way to be the first one-on-one. But there's Brian just playing soccer with the street urchins in the middle of the road in Spain. I don't know where that came from, and I don't know who inspired that, but it's...
Like, he's really striving to look like he has depth.
Eric's date is the kind of date...
Oh my god, does this keep going?
Yes.
Oh no, Wes.
I mean, again, I told you, I don't know why they were edited this way. Because ostensibly, you could have ended the episode after they meet her family.
I was really hoping that was the end.
Instead, we get a helicopter ride over wine country.
Like I said, real good for wine.
And then Eric and Rachel are literally skipping. They are skipping down the road.
Like, hopscotching?
Like, two people in love in a storybook.
Are they gonna click their heels and...
And Eric makes it clear he's sitting on a lot of feelings and emotions. And he's gonna use this night to reveal all of them.
Okay, he could have done that earlier and saved us this.
They ring a bell and make wishes. And I'm pretty sure Eric's wish is to not get eliminated. Which, I hate to break it to him. It's not going to come true. And then, like, that's me. I just summated the entire date. The day portion of the date for you.
Okay, but did they fuck?
Well, then, now it's time for the night. Okay? And the night was made for lovers. But before they can go back to the fantasy suite, they have to have dinner. And at this dinner, Eric recounts all of the big moments they've had together, which naturally culminates in the most important moment that they've shared.
The fantasy suite?
The hot tub.
Like, we've already been over how bad hot tubs are. Definitely don't have sex in one.
And Rachel's like, why was it the hot tub? What about being in the hot tub with me made you realize that you felt something?
Was it the bikini she was wearing?
And she's definitely, like, saying, without saying it, like, did you get hard? Like, was it a physical thing? Is that what you're implying? Like, you didn't know if you wanted to fuck me until that moment, but then you were like, yeah, I do want to fuck her. And he's like, no, I just felt so connected to you because it was the first time that you and I were really alone in an intimate way where I didn't have to worry about other people or other, you know, the other guys here.
So he totally missed the sort of softball she was...
Well, no, because Rachel's still happy about that, because then she pivots and begins trying to leech out of him the three words. Now it's like, okay, I don't want you to say I'm falling in love with you. I want you to say, I love you.
Oh, boy.
And again, Eric, on his A game, tells her, you know, you push me more than any woman that I've ever been with. You make me want to be a better person. You make me ready to be a husband. Like, for the first time in 29 years, I want to be a husband. And not just because I want to be married to someone, but because I want to be married to you.
Mm-hmm.
I love you. And I'm like, you've nailed it with the speeches in this episode, Eric. Like, it's going to be real sad when you go home next week. Because that's coming.
Your speechwriter is going to be out of a job.
And at that point, Rachel's like, you want to go to this fantasy suite, though? Now, last season, they made such a big deal about sex in the fantasy suites. We got an entire montage about Raven potentially having an orgasm for the first time in her life. I don't know what we're going to get with the second half of these fantasy suite dates, because they don't show all of them in this episode.
Oh, blessings. How many? Just the one?
Pretty much. But Eric's is very lackluster. It's just sort of like we cut from her being like, oh, you want to go to the fantasy suite, to like some rumpled sheets the next morning as they get ready to go to breakfast. And the implication there is like, oh, sheets are rumpled, so sex happened. But I feel like no.
Are they like close and, you know, trading touches?
Or they're not even kisses? In the bed. Like he's like brushing his teeth. The sheets are rumpled. They're getting ready to go to breakfast. Like, I believe that they slept in the same bed. I don't really believe that any penetration occurred.
That doesn't seem like a morning after.
Yeah. But Eric's still riding high off of this. And then we move to the second fantasy suite date, or second one-on-one, which is Peter. And as well as his date went with Rachel and the family, that's about as poor as this one-on-one seems to go.
Oh, no.
They explore a vineyard. Rachel is quick to stress that he gets to her in a way that no other guy does. I don't really know what that means.
Yeah, I don't.
They go wine tasting in a cave. A tiny Spanish man sings them a song and tells them the story of the vineyard, but neither of them speak Spanish, so it doesn't really mean anything to them.
It's just very pretty.
And when they get to the, like, serious time, like, well, let's have a conversation, let's talk about our future, and Peter brings up, what does being engaged mean to you? Before they can really delve into that, an adorable little Spanish girl appears out of nowhere. I don't know where I don't know where they found her, but she's a distracting force, and she leads them to a big barrel of grapes, where they get to stomp and make wine, and then make out. Again, that's my very quick assessment of the day portion of the date. Now it's time for the night portion of the date. And at dinner, Peter tries to be sweet and reveals a tradition of his where he saves every cork from a wine bottle that he opens.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I believe that. I also don't really know what the function of that is.
Yeah.
But he dates them all, so he has, like, a Sharpie, and he has Rachel rate, like, the date, and
this does not seem real.
And Rachel's like, okay, this is cute, but let's talk about the engagement thing again. Let's go back. Like, she...
Now I just can't get over this.
Yeah, now that the little cute girl is gone, it's like, we have one thing we're here to talk about. And if you give Rachel a soapbox and an opportunity to talk about how she did not come here for a boyfriend, she will climb on that soapbox, and she will yell very loudly that she did not come here for a boyfriend.
Okay.
And this is where I have to ask you, what does being engaged mean to you?
It's a statement of intent. Like, we're going to get married. This is the state of time in which we have agreed upon this, and it's the prelude to the marriage.
Great. Because that's what an engagement is.
Right.
That is how I've understood it my entire life, and that's how Peter understands it. But it's not how Rachel understands it.
Okay.
Because Peter says, look, to me, engagement is essentially a function of marriage. It is you saying, we are going to get married, now let's plan a time to do that.
Right.
She says, to me, it's about cultivating a relationship.
No.
It's about saying, okay, we're going to take this thing that's been a boyfriend-girlfriend thing and cultivate it.
No, because if that were the case, people would be engaged many times in their lives.
Yeah, and that's Peter's problem with this. He's like, I respect that that's how you see it, but I want to be engaged once, and that is going to be to the person that I then marry, who will be the only person that I marry.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just don't know that I'm ready to propose to you at the end of this. It hasn't been enough time, and I don't know for a fact that you and I should be married. And so until I know that, I'm not going to propose. And it's as if Rachel is hearing another language. It's as if an alien has descended from a spaceship, or the Spanish man has come back to sing another song. Because she just stares at him and then starts crying.
Why?
And proceeds to tell in the ITM that for the first time, she thinks maybe her and Peter might not work out. This is bewildering on a number of levels because you should constantly be thinking as you're doing this show, this relationship might not work out. This relationship might not work out. Because your job as the bachelor or bachelorette is to determine whether or not this relationship might or might not work out. But this is the cliffhanger that we're left on. Not for 1 week, but for 2 weeks. Now, ABC would love to have us believe that Peter will not get to the fantasy suite. And that he will not be in the final two. I feel like she's going to recover from these tears. And whereas I don't think she really had sex with Eric, I think part of that recovery is going to be like, well, I need to have sex with Peter to see how this is. And if we can, like, deepen our relationship on a physical level, if he's not going to get down on one knee. I still don't think he's going to win, because I think Brian is just running out ahead of the pack, even as her family very much does not like him. But we'll find out when they resume in Spain in 2 weeks, and a winner is crowned on that same night. In the interim, next week, we get the Men Tell All special.
Okay, sure.
Where all of the eliminated male contestants return to talk about how they felt when they got eliminated. And
but then don't some of them already know who won? If that's the case?
Well, all three of the finalists do not appear on Men Tell All.
Oh, okay.
Typically, the final two don't appear on Men Tell All, but because they chose to edit this week's episode the way that they did with the weird three. Cliffhanger, the final three don't appear.
So at any point, did anyone point out to Rachel, as she's having this emotional breakdown about what's his name's...
Peter.
Peter not asking her to marry her, that she has all the power in this situation?
In what way?
In the way that if that's a deal breaker for her, she can just eliminate him.
Well, I think that that's her saying, for the first time I realize this might not work out. You know, like, she, like, I may have to send him home.
But she was always going to have to send him home.
Unless she thought, I think deep down, and this is a Rachel problem. I think Rachel will pick Brian because Brian mm-hmm. will propose. And if Peter said to her, I will propose, she would pick Peter.
Okay.
Because she knows that Peter would be the better husband ultimately.
Right.
But she didn't come here for a boyfriend.
Or somebody who wants to date her for a few more months.
Yeah. And so in that way, she'll just pick Brian because she knows that he'll give her the ring.
Neil Lane.
The Neil Lane ring that says, we are going to be cultivating a relationship.
Anything else?
No, I think we've cultivated quite enough as we've reached, as we've hit over the hour mark that I try to bring us in at under every week.
Fantastic. This took up so much of my time.
As always, people can follow me on Twitter at IamWesley.
I am at Alixa. Our intro is Biking in the Park by Lee Rosevere. Our outro is Already There by Josh Woodward. And until next time, you get to suffer with me.
Until Men Tell All.
Oh no.